And I'm telling you, if you machine tool the bore on something that old, you're going to turn it into a piece of shit. Is that really what you want?
You're telling me you don't know your ass from your elbow, and you're talking out of both.
LeMand was small and fat, but he was quivering with rage. And he had a Smith & Wesson snubby tucked into the waistband of his tattered pants, while Luke had nothing but the overwhelming force of his personality. Odd thing that JB had noticed about him, for a man who loved ordnance so much, Luke never actually carried any kind of blaster himself. So that was one hell of a lot of lead against nothing but harsh words. A few men were gathered in the old storefront, playing cards and drinking coffee sub. They gathered there every morning, it seemed, and Luke let them stay even though they had no business for him, and he barely acknowledged their presence. Right now, they weren't even watching the argument. The fat little man was flexing his fingers as he stared up red-faced into Luke's impassive visage.
I don't give a rat's fuck about your stoop, Jack Howie. You can stuff it up your ass for all I care. Might even stop you talking such shit all the time. I am not, repeat, am not going to try and machine tool an old piece of hardware like that. It was made with loving care, handcrafted by men who didn't know there was shit like this on the horizon, and who just wanted to do the best job they could. They loved their work, and I respect that. I love my work, and I'm not going to sully my reputation by carrying out an order that I know to be stupid and wrong just because some asshole thinks he knows better. Why, Howie? Why? If you know how this piece of work should be done, have you even bothered coming here in the first place? How fucking stupid is that?
You shit-stained piece of rag. You always talking to me like that?
Yeah, and you always come back, asshole.
Fuck you. Just do the fucking job and give me my blaster back in working order right now.
Howie's hand crept closer and closer to the Smith & Wesson in his belt. JB noted that and decided to take a hand himself.
Listen, Luke isn't shitting you on this.
Howie looked at JB blankly, trying to comprehend what was being said to him, his face almost purple with rage, but his eyes starting to get a puzzled light in them. Yeah, JB had seen this kind of thing before.
Luke may be telling you bluntly, Howie, but he's right. See, this is a nice blaster. It's a really nice piece of work. Think about it. It's lasted more than 100 years, through sky dark to now. And it was made before men even had the machines to make blasters. This had to be done by hand. It's a different kind of metal from blasters made by machine.
But metal is metal.
No, Howie. That's a mistake a lot of people make. The metals used in blasters changed from time to time as the process of making them changed. See, if you look inside the barrel of this beauty, you can see that the bore markings aren't as exact as those on a machine-tooled blaster of the same type. Now, if you put it in a machine like the ones Luke has out back and try to rebore it, you'll do nothing more than ruin what's there and probably screw up the true line of the barrel, as the metal is softer than that the machines are made for. You see what I'm saying, Howie?
The little fat man looked at him with an odd mix of awe and complete lack of understanding on his face. He nodded, though he didn't know why. JB's tone had been both comforting, soothing, and authoritative at the same time. Anyone from Trader's convoy other than Han would have been astounded to hear the armorer wax lyrical, and at such length. He was known as a man of few words, yet once he was on his favorite subject, it was sometimes hard to shut him up. The same was true of Luke, and no one who had heard them over the last few days and had prior knowledge of their personalities would have believed what they were hearing.
Well, why didn't Luke just say that in the first place?
He was trying to. Anyway, the only way he can do this blaster is by hand, which means you'll have to leave it here. It can't be done while you wait. It's a long job.
Howie peered over JB's shoulder at Luke, who glowered at him.
Well, if some people will just say what they mean in the first place, I'll call for it tomorrow. That okay?
Luke gave the briefest and most condescending of nods. Howie returned the nod and left the old storefront.
Dude, you spoiled my fun.
Man, little fucker looked like he was about to chill you.
Howie? Hell no. I just like riding the little shit is all. He likes it too. Gets his kicks from arguing with me.
His hand was getting a little too close to that Smith & Wesson.
Always does. Howie hasn't so much as shot a muty rabbit in years. He runs a dry goods store across the street. His wife does all the shooting if anyone tries to get away without paying them. Oh, man, she's the scary one. Twice his size up and half across. Face like an axe that's been splintering redwoods all season. You know that's why he comes in here. Gets rid of all his aggression and anger. I've argued with him and reboard that rifle at least 5 times. Doesn't really need it. You look.
JB examined the weapon in greater detail. Luke was right. The bore showed signs of manual reworking, and with great dexterity. Recent, too. JB switched his attention to Luke, who was still grinning. Even when they had been deep in discussion about ordnance, it was rare that the big man's face had cracked. Now, it was like watching someone else in Luke's face.
So I supply a public service, dude. It's not only about the hardware, just mostly. And besides, it livens up the day sometimes.
Luke turned and walked past the tattered drape and into the back room, leaving JB with the ancient but reboard rifle in his hand. Looking around, he saw that the old guys playing cards had completely ignored the exchanges that had just taken place. Maybe it was just that it was all part of the Order of the Ville. Everyone knew about it, but didn't feel the need to explain unless an outsider tried to intervene. He shrugged. Maybe most Villes work this way, and he just never noticed it before. Reading people as well as he could read blasters was something he felt he needed to improve upon. Maybe Luke was good at it, as he'd obviously been around. The big man had never talked about where he had come from, just as he had never asked JB about himself. But it was clear he didn't come from around here. The reference to chopping redwoods gave it away. JB had heard of the giant trees, knew that there were some left still standing after the nuke winters of Skydark, but they were on the other side of the continent. Luke had referred to them in the casual manner of someone who knew from experience what he was talking about. So maybe he had some buried secrets. Maybe he was even more like the Armorer than either man suspected. JB was somehow warmed by the thought. Even JB had to do some work for Trader at some time during their stay. It had been several days, stretching toward a week since they had arrived. Usually the convoy was only in Hollowstar for a couple of days, each side of their trek into the desolate lands beyond. Time enough to do a little trade and lessen the cost of the toll raised by the Baron for using the only road to the east. Time enough for the crew of the convoy to have some downtime. Drink brew, go to gaudy houses, rest up, and have some fun before the arduous wastes that lay in wait for them. This time was different. Trader kept only Abe and Poet in close counsel with him. For the rest of the crew, he had a policy of strictly need to know. So he had stayed silent to all except his 2 trusted lieutenants about the manner in which Baron Emerton had been cagey about tolls and trade, delaying decisions and asking questions in and around the subject of Luke and JB. It was starting to irritate Trader. He wished the fat bastard would just come out and say what he meant so that they could deal with it. Trader wanted JB to stay with him and had no designs on Luke, but he figured that wasn't what Emerton thought, and he was pretty sure he knew what Emerton wanted the more he pondered it. Well, the greasy bastard wasn't going to get it, which would mean nothing but trouble. Meantime, all the Trader could do was keep his people occupied, stop them getting into too many fights, and hope that Emerton would come out into the open pretty damn quick.
Dark Knight, how many more times are you going to have me doing this?
Trader took JB through an inventory of every piece of ordnance carried by the convoy, both for their own use and for use as trade.
As many times as I want, son. I'm the boss here, remember?
I know, but I haven't seen you this itchy before, and I'm figuring there's a reason.
Trader weighed up the slight bespectacled figure in front of him. JB was shrewd, and he'd figure it out, more or less, if given time. Best to take a calculated risk and let him know at least part of the story.
You're no stoop, JB. You must have realized from what the others have said that we don't usually spend that long here before moving out. Truth of the matter is that I'm having trouble with Emerton over the tolls this time out. I'm not sure why, but the fucker's being cagier than a penful of muty pumas. So we're stuck here, and you know what some of us are like when we get cabin fever, or too much time and too much jack to spend.
JB nodded once more. From the look on his face, it hadn't occurred to him that Trader could have met the Armorer himself. More likely, he was thinking of Hunniker, who had the capacity to go triple crazy with little or no provocation. It was a fair enough guess, as Trader did have some concerns in that corner. Nonetheless...
Okay, well, you know the best way to stop that happening is to keep people busy. Keep them somewhere that they can't raise hell and get themselves blasted from here to the farm and leave us in the shit.
Guess so, but shit, all I was gonna do was spend more time with Luke. Can learn a lot off a man like that. It won't be that much time, as we'll be on our way soon enough.
True enough. But I got something else I need you to do for me, JB. You all got some downtime tonight, and I know that Han is gonna want to go and get wasted on the local brew. She always does it when we're here. Tries to fuck anything that'll have her. And gets real feisty if something or someone gets in her way.
From the look on JB's face, a slowly dawning, pained expression, he knew that the armorer had drawn the conclusion he wanted.
Shit, no. I gotta bodyguard her all night and make sure nothing happens and no one buys the farm.
Got it in one.
I'll do anything. Take the whole armory apart, grease it and reassemble it. Clean the shit off all the latrines. Hell, I'll even let Abe try to explain the comm system to me again, but not that.
I knew you'd understand, JP. You and her get on better than anyone. Shit. I know enough to know that no fucker on the face of this rad-blasted Earth can control her. But you got a better chance of keeping her under wraps than anyone else on the convoy. It's the shitty end of the stick. But sometimes that's all there is to grab hold of and hold yourself out.
And that's supposed to make me feel better?
I'll tell you what. It sure as hell makes me feel better.
Trader congratulated himself on his double score. Not only had he kept Luke and JB apart for a while to give Emerton something to think about, he had also got the ever-present problem of Hunniker under control for the moment. It seemed such a simple solution. How could it go wrong?
Fuck's sake! I don't need to be wet nursed like a baby!
Hunniker entered the bar with JB at her elbow.
Who says it's that? Maybe I just want to have a few brews.
Oh, bullshit, JB. How many kinds of stoop do you think I am? If you had your way, you'd be boring, about to bore with that lump of rock Luke.
He didn't want to fuck you, eh?
I didn't want the big lunk anyway. Only thing that get him hard is a kind of blaster he hasn't seen before. Not that I'm saying the same thing about you, but...
I didn't think you were, at least not until you mentioned it. Just for that, it's your jack on the bar tonight.
Hunniker and the armorer seated themselves at the old bar stools that were metal framed and bolted to the floor. Looking around, JB could see that the tables and seats in the rest of the bar had been taken from an old pre-dark diner and were similarly bolted down. Well, that explained at least in part why the glass had stayed in place so long. The bar was more or less empty. It was still early, and most of the people in Hollowstar were going about their business. Everyone in Hollowstar had business: manufacture and repair of small goods, small holdings on the edge of the ville, education and trades for the children. The only people who had any kind of excuse to be in the bar at this time of day were those whose work kept them busy at night. Now was their time to take some rest and recuperation before beginning the evening and night shifts that ensured the ville worked 24/7. Emerton and his predecessors had instilled in the community a strong work ethic. Some may have asked why a community should work itself so hard for seemingly so little reward. Riches were not there to be had this far east, but by the same token, a crushing poverty that could have wiped out the community was only a spit away. The work ethic and the organization that had brought to the community were what kept them afloat. The price of their freedom, or their very lives, was eternal diligence. Women worked in this ville. However, many of them worked not in occupations, but as wives and mothers. Children were important to keeping the machine that was Hollowstar in motion, a new generation replacing the elderly, those that lived that long, at regular intervals. Despite the seemingly sedate pace of life that echoed the old vids on which the ville was modeled, there was a restless urgency lurking beneath the surface that was born of the high-tension wire on which their lives were balanced. There had to be some release. And so those women who were not wives and mothers found themselves, at some time or another, doing service in the gaudy houses that lay on the outskirts of the ville, hidden behind the facade, but common enough knowledge for the traveler to find them with ease. After all, they oiled the wheels of the local economy as much as they provided relief. So what did these women do in their downtime? They drank in the bars of whatever ville they worked. That was why JB had thought she was a gaudy slut when he saw her in there. It wasn't the first time that he'd seen her. When he was in the center of Hollowstar, either going to or from Luke's, or even when he had been on some task for Trader, he had seen her often over the past few days. For this reason, if nothing else, it entered his head that she had to work the gaudy house mostly at night. Once he had seen her leaving Luke's when he had been on his way there. What the big guy got up to was no business of JB's, and he hadn't asked. Neither had Luke said anything. She was always alone, which was another reason he figured she worked in a gaudy house. She was never with anyone. Most of the women who didn't work the houses could be seen with a man or with kid at some point. It was that kind of regimented ville. Each time he'd seen her, their eyes met, and he'd seen some kind of spark in there, a light that seemed to be smiling at him, even though her face said nothing. Hell, He didn't even know what her name was. Maybe if he did, he could have found where she worked and paid for a few hours. Maybe not. In a way, it would ruin the illusion. JB was no romantic, but this thing that he could feel within him was like nothing he had ever felt before. Hun sat next to him, a bristling ball of energy. Even when she was still, the nervous tension that powered her had a kineticism that made her seem to be in perpetual motion, even when she was still. Normally, he took no notice. Now it seemed to irritate the hell out of him, a constant reminder that she was there when he wanted to be alone, so that the woman across the bar would talk to him, so that when she did, he would be certain she was looking at him, not at Hun, or at both of them.
You gonna sit there, or you gonna buy me a drink?
Dark Knight, when the fuck are you gonna stop?
The traitor had kept his convoy rolling for hours after the skirmish, and even though dusk was descending, he showed no signs of calling a temporary halt to their insistent progress.
Don't see no reason to stop, man. Shit, we already been attacked once, and I don't want it to happen again.
Riders are supposed to be tough. Every rider we've ever had has been hard.
And how many have you had just in the time you've been with this convoy?
Dunno, 6? Maybe 8 or 9?
In less than 2 years, and you're not even sure how many. You ever stop to think why?
Those are the risks.
Bullshit. You run a good convoy and you look after the people you run. Good working and good profit comes from taking care of the pieces that make the whole. That means people as much as wags and ordnance. Keep the same personnel and you get a better run convoy.
Those words of wisdom from your precious traitor? Where's he now?
Before Laguerre had a chance to react, the armorer had his hands around his throat, pinning him back against the wall.
What happened to traitor isn't anyone's business but his. I tell you something else, too. It wasn't the way he ran his convoy that gave him grief. Might just be that way for you, though.
Even as JB spoke, he felt the cold, hard muzzle of a gun nudge gently at the base of his skull.
Easy, John Barrymore Dix. You wouldn't want to do anything too stoop, would you?
JB was aware of the muzzle at his neck. He was aware that Eula was holding it steady. So steady that it was firm against the neck muscle without the slightest tremor. He figured it was an old revolver, as that had definitely been a hammer click and not just a round chambering. And it must have been a pretty long barrel, too, as she was some distance away. He couldn't feel the heat of her body up close or feel her hot breath on him. Long barrel? She was at arm's length. That made it difficult for him to risk a sweep back to try to deflect her aim.
Okay. Listen carefully. I'm going to let go of this bastard, and I'm going to step back slowly. I'm telling you this so you don't get twitchy.
Does it feel like I get twitchy?
No, it doesn't. But I like to be sure. I can't move until you stop trying to push that blaster through the back of my neck.
Okay. I'm going to move back slowly, too. But not so slow that you could try anything and get away with it.
I can believe that.
As he spoke, he felt the pressure ease on the back of his neck, fading as the muzzle moved away from his skin, and only the tingling after-impression was left. Equally slowly, he loosened his grip at Laguerre's throat and stepped back.
That's cool. We'll say no more about this, okay? It was a disagreement in the heat of a moment. You're not so stupid as to carry this forward. Neither am I.
If that's what you think, I'll go with that.
The armorer turned to Eula. She still had the gun in her hand. The part of him that was always the armorer was pleased to note that his guess of a Colt 44 had been correct. The other part of him, J.B. Dix the man, had other things occupying his mind.
You want to put that thing away, or you want me to admire the job you've done on it?
She put it back in a holster, concealed in the thigh of her combat pants.
Good to see you're so dedicated to your friends. Man who'd risk his skin for others is a rare enough commodity these days. Wonder if you were always like that.
Not for me to say. You're not so bad like that yourself, are you?
Man pays my jack. Figure he has a right to me covering his ass.
Fair point. Laguerre, I still think you're a triple shit rat fuck to not stop.
You can't please everyone. I told you when I picked you people up that I wanted to make a straight run without stopping. You've seen why. You get scum fuckers like that attacking all the way across this pest hole.
True enough. But we saw them off, and there's little chance of another attack so soon. Any muties and cold hearts out here are going to be pretty spread out. Ryan and Jack need to rest up. At least get a break so they can sleep. Fuck it, man. They'll be crashing the bikes because they're falling asleep on them if you don't give them a chance to rest. We don't need them to be trailing behind as much as we need them alert and ready to fight. Least you can do is let them stash the bikes and catch some sleep in one of the wags while we ride. Everyone else gets a chance to rest.
Zaire doesn't.
JB looked at the wag jockey. The man was staring ahead at the road, muscles set like high-tension wire around stone. He didn't seem to have heard his name mentioned, even to have registered what had just occurred at his back.
Man, that boy is so hyped on Jolt he's not sleeping or awake. He's more like a machine than this wag.
Yeah, I guess you got a point about that. Still don't want to stop, though.
So you want to lose two good men and their bikes for the sake of pursuing this non-stop stoop plan? It's playing the odds, man. We stop now, make a quick switch, and we can be on our way before any fucker has a chance to catch up with us. Check what's around. There's jack shit.
The trader stroked his beard. He looked at Eula, though his eyes were still hidden by his shades, and it was only the inclination of his head that signaled his question. Without a word, the young woman went to the opports on either side of the wag and looked out into the twilight. JB could see over her shoulder that the land was empty as far as could be seen.
I guess Dix is right.
Bet I am.
I think he's right. Makes sense, and there's not going to be a better time.
Okay, let's do it. No fucking around. This is gonna be quick.
JB nodded shortly and crossed to the comm mic.
Millie, Doc, Cody, we need to bring in Jack and Ryan before they drop. Get your wag drivers to slow their speed so that they can see. We stop suddenly and they'll smash into the back of us.
A good point, my dear John Barrymore. Such an unnecessary accident must surely be avoided.
Mildred looked at Reese, but the giant woman was impassive. She had said no more than a few words in all the time that Mildred had traveled with her, and it was unlikely that she was about to start now.
So how much do you have to slow, and how quickly?
Reese shrugged. Mildred waited, but nothing more was forthcoming.
Well, I'm not just asking you out of idle curiosity. I'm assuming that you have some kind of procedure that you use when you get such an order.
A what?
A procedure.
What's that?
The thing that you usually do when you get such an order.
Never done a run like this before. Never had an order like that before. So got no procedure.
Then what do you intend to do?
Oh, see what they do in front, then follow them.
Laguerre seemed to be the only one who could get through to Zaire. The wag jockey still stared straight ahead, seemingly unseeing and uncomprehending, but staring straight and true. The trader stood and crossed the interior of the wag until he was by Zaire's side. He leaned over him, arm around his shoulders, whispering something into his ear. The wag jockey's head moved. It was the smallest of movements, noticeable only because he was otherwise so still. Laguerre smiled, patting him on the shoulder before returning to his seat. The wag began to slow, almost imperceptibly at first, but gaining a backward momentum as the distance grew longer. So the convoy was going to pull up gradually, giving the incommunicado rear riders a chance to assimilate what was happening. That was good. What was perhaps not so good, what was worrying the armorer, was the way in which the trader had a hold over the wag jockey. Was it just Jolt, or was it something else? He'd seen Mutie psi powers over the years. Hell, he'd even seen good old-fashioned hypnotism. If it was something like this that the trader was using to keep Zaire under control and awake for such long periods, not just shit like Jolt, then there was no way of knowing how much control he had over the rest of the convoy crew. Maybe that would explain Eula's strange attitude. Maybe not. Doc looked across at Raven, who had expertly slid into the driver's seat to replace Ramona while the wag was still in motion.
It would appear, my dear, that your immaculately performed maneuver was unnecessary, as we shall shortly be stopping, albeit possibly briefly.
Boy, you love those big words, hon.
Well, then allow me to be a little more succinct.
Still too big, hon.
Oh, yeah, and you wish you could say those words more often.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Docky Babe, we don't usually do the long haul like this, but there have been plenty of times on long stretches where we've had to swap over for one reason or the other. The big wag drivers, like Ray and Reese and the other ones before them, they use Jolt and shit to stay awake. I'm not overly fond of that shit, and neither is my girl here.
Yeah, look at what it does to you. Why the hell you think they usually drive alone?
A fair point. And so we slow down gradually before coming to a halt?
Well, how the hell else are we going to do it if we don't want to have those riders smush themselves into the wag's ass?
Well, that was my point. No one has told you by what levels and over what time scale to decrease your speed. There seems to be no way in which you have an operational structure for this.
Oh, there you go again, Docky. making everything more complicated than it has to be. We look at the wagon front and adjust according to what it's doing. Armin Baby just leads the way, and we let
him. Well, that's one for the books, like they used to say. We're supposed to be stopping, and Armand said right at the beginning that we wouldn't be, so it must be something real important to make him change his mind. Either that or your friend with the glasses is real persuasive. Mind you, Eula seems to have taken a real shine to him, what with persuading Armand to make Cody ride in the second wag, because he's been with Armand since the beginning. Hell, even longer than I have, which is saying something, I guess. But then, if it means we pick up your friends from the back of the convoy, then it's got to be a good thing as far as you're concerned, right? Still, it's not like him to change his mind once he started on a course of action. We've never done a straight run without any kind of stop along the way, of course, so maybe he realized that it's not quite as easy as he thought it would be. I don't know. What do you think?
Christy blinked and looked into Ray's questioning eyes. The small, almost wizened old man had eyes that sparkled and burned brightly.
Maybe, I couldn't say. You know Laguerre much better than I do. Maybe there's something I don't know that could account for it.
Yeah, I know I go on sometimes, but I kind of thought that you'd be interested, seeing as it's your people we're stopping for.
I'm interested in that. It's just that I don't know why Laguerre would want to stop for any other reason than J.B. has persuaded him that it would be a good idea to pick up the bikers rather than to run them into the ground and lose that defense.
Okay, so you were listening a little. I know I never stop talking, honey. It's just I can't help it these days. I do it when there's no one else in the cab, too, you know, so it's not just you.
I know. I figured that one out. And it's not that I don't care about Laguerre. On the contrary, the more any of us know about him, the better. It's just that
it becomes one long drone after a while. I know, honey, I'm only too well aware of what it sounds like. Don't you fret. You just ignore old Ray for now, as I ain't really got much else to say. I'll just slow the container down and let it all come to a halt.
Ryan was keeping the bike upright only by the carefully balanced forces of motion and his own iron will. He suspected that Jack was more alert and awake than himself, because he had seen the albino hunt. And when Jack did this, he seemed to switch into a state of being that was almost beyond the limits of human endurance. But Ryan wasn't like that. He was strong, and he had stamina for sure. The firefight had, however, taken a lot out of him. His limbs felt heavy, and his muscles ached in places they usually didn't. The posture of spending so long on a bike was beginning to reach areas of his musculature that weren't often called into use for such prolonged periods. His eyes were also heavy. His vision, already blurred by the dust and grime on the goggles and in the air around him, was further blurred by fatigue. A dark tunnel closing in at the edges. Without comm transmissions, and with the white noise of the wagon bike roar to act as an isolation blanket, he could feel sleep inexorably closing on him. He shook his head to rattle his brain and waken himself, but all it succeeded in doing was unsettle his balance so that he wobbled precariously on the bike. He was still executing the patrol pattern he had established with Jack, but it was doubtful as to whether he was actually observing anything as he completed the circuit. So it was that he failed to notice that the convoy was gradually slowing. It was as though he was in his own private hell, where nothing existed but the bone-aching fatigue and the monotony of the circuit. It took Jack breaking the circuit and adjusting so that he was riding parallel to Ryan before the one-eyed man realized that something was happening, even longer before he understood that the convoy was coming to a halt. With Jack still riding parallel, his red eyes dulled behind the goggles, white hair whipping behind him, Ryan slowed his own machine.
Stay in the center of the blacktop. Keep the vantage. Repeat. Ryan, Jack, we're bringing the convoy to a halt to take you on board so you can rest up. The wags are slowing gradually. Decrease your own speed. As soon as you can hear this transmission, use the comm mics to respond. They're open, so all you have to do is speak. When we stop for the transfer, we're going to stay in the center of the blacktop to keep vantage. Repeat.
Read you, JB. Ryan, almost out. Wonder when you fuckers give us a break.
Almost, but not quite. I'm with Jack on this. Fireblast, I'll be glad to get some rest.
Now aware that the convoy was coming to a halt, Ryan regulated his own speed so that it came in line with that of Jack and of the rest of the convoy. Within a few hundred yards of contact between the riders and the rest of the convoy being reestablished, the convoy eventually rolled to a halt. Christy and Mildred jumped down from the high cabs of the refrigerated container trucks. They both wanted to escape their respective wag jockeys as much as they wanted to check on Jack and Brian. They were beaten to their target by Doc, who had been closer. He looked tired as the goggles were removed to reveal eyes that were redder than Doc had ever seen, but he had flipped over into hunter mode and was proving once more his ability to run on empty. Ryan was finding it harder to dismount.
Easy, my friend. You've come too far to injure yourself merely by falling over.
Take a lot more than that to take me out, Doc.
Good, but there is much we must discuss, I think.
Christy and Mildred had reached them as Doc's murmured imperative died away.
Shit, Ryan. You look all in. Let me check you.
Thought you'd both have to buy the farm out there, lover. The way this cold heart drives his crew.
Christy had by now taken over the role of supporting Ryan, while Mildred moved on to check Jack.
Hell of a firefight. But it's been quiet since. Why didn't he stop?
Fool wanted to do this run nonstop, and when he said it, he meant it. Makes you kind of wonder if he lost his other Sekhmen in exactly the way he tells it.
I would venture that nothing that issues from Armand Laguerre's lips should be taken as entirely truthful. If one was of a suspicious nature, it would be worth inquiring to oneself what those sealed containers really held.
And what, maybe, he's really going to be doing when we get to our destination.
The armorer had been on the point of leaving the armored wagon and heading back to check on Ryan and Jack when he heard the comm unit. JB turned, half his attention on the traitor and half on wondering if there was a way he could kill the receiver before someone said something that would cause a problem. He'd had every intention of sharing his concerns with his friends, but only when he'd made sure that the comm mics were removed from both Jack and Ryan. The tech was so small that it was easy to forget it was there, especially as the noise of the convoy had rendered it useless for so long. What JB heard next just proved that he was too late. If Ryan and Jack had been alert enough to realize that their mics were still live, then Mildred and Christy had just simply forgotten about them.
Yeah, it's good to know what you people think of me. Of course, they're only agreeing with what you think, right? And they got a point. I work my people hard, and then we play hard. That's how we get ahead and stay ahead. If your people don't want to take those risks, then you know what the hell you can do. But I'd say neither of us has a choice.
JB listened, but as he did so, his attention was focused on the woman. Laguerre was a cold heart, but he was also obvious. He had no real guile. Eula was different. She was the one who JB, that all of them, had real cause to watch. She had guile in plenty, and the masked motivation to drive it.
Go and talk to him. Tell him what the hell you want. Man, what are you gonna do? Stay out in the middle of this pest hole with no transport? Carry on with me and hope for the best.
Laguerre was right. Their options were less than zero. JB turned and left the wag, feeling Eula's eyes burning into him as he made his way to the rear of the convoy. The cabs of the two large containers were empty, their drivers making the most of the opportunity to stretch their legs and piss in peace. The same was true of the crews of the other two wags, taking advantage of downtime that would be brief, but welcomed for its unexpected appearance. As he drew near, JV tapped his cheek. He was greeted by puzzled expressions until Jack reached up to his own face, touching the mic, as he realized that they had been overheard.
Stow the bikes on the rear wag.
JB indicated that the mic should be removed and stored in the bikers' saddlebags. There was a silence that fell over them until this was done. Then Ryan stepped back over to JB.
How much?
Everything. Clear as if you were standing in the wag with us.
Shit! Well, how...
Do not berate yourself, or any of us. For what is done is done. The question is, what was our traitor friend's reaction?
Bastard wasn't at all surprised, but that's okay. He's not the dangerous one. He wasn't going to stop, but he's just a cold heart and one that's easy to read. It's the woman that's really dangerous. She wants me chilled, I'm sure of it, but in her own time.
Why?
If I knew that, I'd have a better idea how to handle her. It's not just her and me, though. She's got something on Laguerre. Scum like that doesn't just trust a person like he does her, not unless there's something in it for them. Maybe if I could find some way of getting her to open up about where and how she knows me.
Listen up.
Ryan had seen Eula approaching from the front of the convoy and knew there was little time.
Be triple careful, JB. Rest of us be the same. We know what Laguerre's capable of, but she's an unknown quantity. Gotta be prepared for all possibilities.
JB had turned as soon as Ryan interrupted him. The one-eyed man would only do that for a reason, and it was obvious as soon as she caught his eye.
What's the hurry? Afraid we're saying nasty things that might hurt your feelings?
Nothing you could say could hurt me, John Barrymore. Not anymore. But we've got to get moving. Get the riders into the wag, get everyone else back at their posts, and let's get moving. I don't want us getting caught because you people want to conspire among yourselves.
Eula turned, and ran back to the armored wag, leaving JB to puzzle over her first words. What had hurt her so badly? And what did it have to do with him? The past. His head hurt. Badly.
Oh!
As JB opened his eyes, as slowly and carefully as was possible, the slightest hint of light made him want to close them again. The light was like needles in his eyes, which was a bastard stoop phrase. How did you know what needles in the eyes were like unless some cold-hearted plunged them in? In which case, the light wouldn't mean anything to you anymore. Wandering. His mind was wandering, and he needed to concentrate so he could at least remember where the hell he was. Well, he could remember where he had been, if nothing else. The woman who had been haunting him for the past few days. The gaudy slut. No, wait. She wasn't that. He could remember her saying something about a husband who never paid her any attention. Shit. Some crazy with a blaster coming after him because his wife had been bedded by another man was all JB needed. Hell, he was confident he could best anyone in Hollowstar in a one-on-one showdown. The trouble was, it wouldn't stop there. Traitor would get involved, that fat bastard Baron Emmerton would stick his flabby paws in, and it could turn into a real situation. Then it came back to him, hazy at first, but starting to make sense as he was able to put pieces together. She'd asked them if they would buy her a drink.
Them? Shit.
He was supposed to be babysitting Hun, seeing that she didn't get out of hand. Traitor would have his ass for that. It had been early, the bar hadn't been full. He could feel Hun itching to get at the woman as she had come over. Hun offering her whatever she wanted in a voice that made it clear she wasn't talking about brew. Hun making no effort to show her displeasure when she was lightly rebuffed, and the woman had introduced herself to JB.
Sorry, sugar, but when I was asking for a drink, I was kinda looking at the one with the dick. I'm just not that kind of girl. But hey, I can't just call you the one with the dick, can I? So, what does everyone else call you?
JB smiled, the effort making his face hurt, as he remembered Hun shaping some smart-ass answer before his eye caught hers. So the armorer had introduced himself, feeling less at ease than at any time he could remember from a long way back. That was one of the reasons he'd drunk so much. Why, when he'd faced more situations of danger than he could think of, should talking to a beautiful woman have caused him so much anxiety? Because she was beautiful. Because she liked him. And maybe because he was aware of Hun simmering in the background, getting more and more drunk, more and more bellicose with each round that slipped down her throat. Her name was Laurel. She asked him what he did, and why she'd only just noticed him. He told her, and had noticed her face change when he explained that he was Traitor's armorer. He asked her what the matter was, and she replied only that it meant he wouldn't be sticking around. They talked about where he'd come from and what he'd seen. He told her things that he hadn't even told Traitor. Why, he couldn't say. Even in his inebriated state, he'd never felt the urge to unload his past onto anyone else. She listened. Hell, she'd even been interested, or so it seemed. And yet, when he asked her about herself, she'd been less forthcoming. All she would say was that she was married to a man in the Ville who had Jack, but who neglected her. He was so absorbed in his work and the little world he'd built around it that he didn't even notice whether or not she was there. JB had asked her who would be that stoop, but she hadn't answered. She had remained silent, staring into his eyes, stirring up feelings within him that he wasn't sure he'd ever felt before. Then she had leaned into him, and they had kissed. He could taste the alcohol on her breath and the urgency. He knew that she wanted him like he wanted her. Oh, yeah. And then Hun had started a fight. All the while he and Laurel had been talking, Hun had been drinking, and the bar had been filling up as the night drew on. At the edges of his attention, he had been aware that Hun had been arguing with some big guy with a port wine birthmark on his face about who was the better hunter, who was the better shooter. Then the bar broke out into chaos, and JB found himself in the fight, mostly trying to save the residents of Hollowstar from Hunniker, and not the other way around. So that was why he hurt so much, not just the brew. Scant consolation, but at least Traitor would see that he went down trying to stop the fight. He risked opening his eyes again, and rolled over on the bunk. Hun was beside him, covered in blood splatters that were not her own. And there he had been, expecting to roll over and see Laurel. Maybe that was just as well in the circumstances. JB risked pulling himself upright and was surprised, as his eyes focused properly and the room ceased to spin, to see Abe standing on the other side of rusty bars, watching him. A faint smile creased the rangy man's face.
Lucky for you that Emerton prefers his men to take prisoners. Lots of Vills would have seen you and Hun buying the farm for this.
Maybe the farm will be better than how my head feels right now.
Don't think that kind of shit will work with Trader. Wake that stupid bitch up. Let's get out of here before Emerton changes his mind.
Eh?
Works like this. Hollistar is pretty small, and they're rich compared to a lot of Vills because they make the most of what they got, which means everything is stretched as far as it'll go. Emerton starts killing people for bar fights like most places. He ain't gonna have much of a workforce before too long. And that'd fuck everything up. So if they step out of line, they get punished by a few days in here, stuff taken, working without Jack for a while. Anything to make their life harder. Make them think before they do it again. It's called, restitution or something. Ask Trader. He explained it to me once.
I figure he may have a few other things to say to me.
Oh, yeah. You might be right about that.
Honecker, wake up. Wake up, Honecker. Oh, come on.
Oh, shit. Trader's gonna whip my ass.
JB wasn't as resigned. He knew he'd let Trader down, and as a man who prided himself on holding on to some honor in this pest hole of a world, he felt that he'd let himself down, too. The confrontation with Trader wasn't something he was looking forward to with any kind of relish. Yet there were some consolations. The memory of how Laurel tasted when he kissed her. And more importantly, the fact that when he left the jail building with Hun and Abe and made his way across the town square, he could see her. Everyone else was too wrapped up in their everyday business to notice. Anyway, why should they care? Abe didn't know who she was. And Hun was too concerned with her aching head and the thought of having Trader rip into her. But JB noticed her, standing on the sidewalk on the opposite side of the square, near the old storefront next to Luke's. She was leaning against a stanchion, and when she caught his eye, she blew him a kiss and mouthed, "Thank you," for saving her from harm last night, he assumed. She had to have been waiting for how long? After that, anything Trader had to say to him wouldn't matter. Punishment was nothing more than a few harsh words and some detail cleaning out the wag latrines. Hun had it worse. Stripped of Jack and her shares on this trip, she accepted it, and she accepted that JB's punishment should be the lesser.
Trader should have known putting a lightweight like you in to cover my ass was a mistake, John Barrymore.
If you weren't such a stupid, it wouldn't matter.
Honecker looked up and away from the encrusted receptacle, glad to get some fresher air into her lungs.
Oh, all the same, you want to watch that bitch.
Why? Because she prefers me to you?
Because you like her a lot. I see it all over your face. Even though you're in the middle of shit and piss. But soon we'll move on, and she'll still be here. Don't want the Iron Man or the convoy distracted at the wrong moment. It could chill us all. Anyway, she'll still be here. She'll always be here. That means she's got people here. And people that could be trouble if they don't like you messing with her.
I thought of that. Don't you worry.
And he had. There wasn't much else that had occupied his mind since he left the jail and had seen her waiting for him. Not that it was going to make a blind bit of difference. The Armorer was stubborn and single-minded when he fixed on an idea, and he was fixed.
I don't know how much longer we're going to be here.
Hon, it could be an hour, it could be a week. Emerton's an asshole when it comes to getting the jack rolling in. Shit, he never pays my old man when he should. Always has to chase it. That don't improve his temper none.
Laurel rolled over to face him, propping herself up on one elbow, squinting against the ray of light that penetrated the thin drape over the window. Her hair tumbled over one eye, the other screwed up, the better to see him. She had a thin sheet over her, and he could see the line of her breast beneath it. Her arm moved beneath the sheet, her hand reaching for him and squeezing.
You recover quick. Bet you're real popular up and down the trade route.
You'd never believe me.
Try me.
I don't usually do this. Maybe a gaudy house now and again, but never like this. Never getting distracted from work. Keeping Trader's armory in condition, building it for him, checking ordnance for trade keeps me busy.
Why?
Because there's a lot to be done.
No, I mean, why work so hard for him?
Oh, I owe Trader a lot. He took me out of nowhere, gave me something to live for. It's a hard world to live in, and being with Trader makes it a whole lot easier. Besides, I like my work. I've always been fascinated by blasters and explosives. Ordnance makes the world tick. Not much survived Skydark, but those little beauties did. Machinery, engineering, intricate pieces that could survive anything. Gotta admire work like that. And then there's what they mean. Ordnance is power. It means you can get it, then keep it. Man with the best armory is the most secure, can run the best convoy, the best vill.
Haven't heard you talk that much before now.
Been too busy to talk much.
Yeah, that's true. I know why it is I like you, why I want you.
And that is?
You remind me of someone. We were happy once, but he was like you. The only thing that matters was what he did for the Baron. Took up all his time, all his attention. Truth is that after a while, I might as well just not even been there.
Well, that's hard to believe.
Yeah, you say that now, but it'll come down to that in the end. It always does.
So what does he do that keeps him away from you?
Oh, hon, we don't want to talk about that. We got better things to do.
He continued to see her every day. Before Laurel, his life had been orderly. Work was everything. And since they had been in Hollowstar, his friendship with Luke had been equally as important. But now he found himself juggling time that he didn't have. He still wanted to get the work done and spend time with the taciturn weapons master of the Vill. Then again, he burned every time he thought of Laurel. Moreover, he had to keep his liaison with her secret. So he had to act normally and not call attention to himself while making time for her. J.B. Dix was not a naturally devious man. It took Hun no time at all to spot that something was amiss.
Your trouble, John Barrymore, is that you're incapable of lying. Okay, so maybe if it was a life or death, you could do it. And if it was a one-off. But a sustained lie is a harder thing to keep going. Sneaking around just isn't you. Me? I don't know if I could do it either. But I don't put myself in that position, and you have. And man, do you suck at it.
It made him a little more wary, but it did nothing to deter him. He was willing to take any amount of risks for her, in a way that he had never considered before. J.B. Dix was a man who had weighed the odds on everything, and had never put himself or others at risk unless it was strictly necessary. Hunt had been telling him that this was now exactly what he was doing. The bizarre thing, the thing that he found it the hardest to assimilate in so many ways, was that the liberation it gave him to be acting in this way was more exhilarating than anything he had ever known, which was dangerous. It made him careless. He would go about his everyday business as though in a trance. Things got done, conversations were held, the world of Hollowstar passed by his eyes, but it was all flat and black and white. Even the heated conversations with Luke over the qualities of blasters and explosives no longer held the sparkle and fire that they had on their first meeting. Despite that, even JB was living enough in the real world to realize that it wasn't one-sided. After they had been standing side by side in silence for some time, JB watching Luke reconvert a recovered MP5 from gas to real ordnance, the armorer decided to broach new territory.
You're quiet?
I'm always quiet. It's what I'm known for.
Yeah, but that's with those stoops who know nothing about ordnance. Never heard you this quiet since I got here.
Maybe I've got things on my mind.
Well, things that have nothing to do with blasters?
Life would be simpler if there was nothing but that. But there isn't. That's where it gets difficult.
Any shit you want to talk about?
JB, do I strike you as the kind that likes to share shit?
No, but it's what people are supposed to ask their friends, right?
Appreciate that. But it don't do no good. Not in the long run. Only action counts.
Guess you're right there.
The two men lapsed into silence once more, with Luke working assiduously, until JB checked his wrist chron.
Shit. Trader wanted me and I'm late.
Never keep the boss man waiting, JB. I'll be seeing you.
JB nodded to himself as Luke was still looking down, and made his way out of the workshop. When he got out onto the covered sidewalk, he didn't turn and head for the area where Trader's convoy was sequestered. He turned the opposite way and set off for the far end of the Vill. Between the goods spilling out of the storefronts and the cluster of people going about their business, he saw her. She was standing at the farthest reach of the covered sidewalk, and it seemed to him that the crowds parted so that he could see her. Her hair blew out behind her in the breeze, dark curls tossed in the currents. A flicker of a smile played across her full lips, and her dark eyes met his with a playful sparkle. It didn't look exactly like that to the two people who were watching JB as he headed toward her. What they saw was more prosaic. Laurel leaning against a stanchion, pushing the hair from her eyes as the breeze blew it across her face. A pout on her face and not looking her best as her current squeeze hurried toward her. They saw JB push past people, step over goods and produce, without seeming to even notice they were there. Nothing could stay him from his destination. Indeed, he seemed to speed up as he approached her. The watchers saw him lean into her, as if to kiss her. They saw her pull back and mouth something. Not here, or words to that effect. It was hard to lip-read at such a distance. And then pull him down a side street, on the way to wherever their assignation was to be on this day. JB thought he was being discreet. He was anything but. And the woman? Who knew what was going through Laurel's head? But for one of the watchers, it was obvious that this wasn't the first time she had done this. Was the other watcher aware of that also? The two of them remained in position for some moments after JB and Laurel had gone. One watcher's attention was still fixed on the empty space where the armorer and the woman had been, but a short while before. The other had switched attention from JB to their counterpart. Reactions would be paramount, the second watcher figured. Luke wiped his hands on his oily apron, shook his head, and turned back to his storefront. He took a step toward the door, then paused and looked back toward his last point of observation. He stood there, his face stoic and impossible to read, before seeming to make a decision and taking a step into the shadows of the storefront, melting out of sight. Hun watched him go. Then she looked back to where she had seen JB under the spell of the woman from the bar. A few questions over the preceding days had soon settled what had been bothering her, and she had been watching the armorer of her own volition.
Oh, fuck! If I had a fan man, would I be throwing shit at it right now?
The present. Even before the twilight had closed upon them any further, the convoy had regrouped and set on its way once more. The bikes were secured, one each, to the back of the second wag and the one that brought up the rear. For reasons of space, Laguerre informed them, it would be necessary for the two riders to be split up. So Ryan was deputed to travel with Doc in the rear wag, while Jack had to travel with Cody and the crew of the second wag. It struck Ryan that Laguerre's tactic was to split the two of them so that no wag contained more than two of the friends. He'd obviously decided that to separate the two riders was his best option here. He'd got it wrong on two counts. First, he'd underestimated Doc. Second mistake, putting Ryan in with Doc instead of Jack. The one-eyed man wasn't certain, but he was assuming that Laguerre assessed Jack as a greater threat, even though he wasn't the nominal leader. Okay, he was right in that, as Jack was a killing machine. But Jack, even though he and Doc had a relationship that was built on the surprising comradeship that diversity could bring, was not a talker. Ryan was. Doc certainly was. Even under the listening ears of Raven and Ramona, it was possible for the two of them to discuss their situation, albeit in an elliptic manner. It was something Jack would have found impossible, as he had little time for such language skills. So obviously Laguerre liked to think of himself as a schemer and thinker. Trouble for him was that he wasn't as smart as he would have liked to think. Double trouble for him was that he assumed Raven and Ramona would keep their ears open. He liked to think his crew was as sharp and devious as himself. Another misjudgment, as Ryan found out within a short time of being aboard their wag. Shortly after the convoy began to roll, Ryan crashed out on the bunk, exhausted by his time on the bike. But his rest was disturbed, either by the adrenaline coursing through his veins that had kept him from nodding out on the blacktop, or else from the noise within the wag, which seemed to be only marginally quieter than when he was in its wake. Ryan opened his eye to find Ramona staring down at him. Her face loomed at him, a tight smile on her lips. Her eyes were dark and brown, drinking him in.
It's okay, sugar. I wasn't gonna bite. Not unless you want me to.
Ramona, leave the poor man alone. He ain't gonna be no good to you unless he's had some rest.
Yeah, and you telling me that you wouldn't be doing exactly the same thing if you weren't sitting where I am?
That ain't the point, babe.
Ryan, still partly in the throes of a disturbed sleep, was having some trouble assimilating what the two women meant. That wasn't helped when Doc's face loomed into vision. The old man's smile was strong and brilliant. His eyes sparkling.
You must excuse Ramona, and indeed Raven, my dear Ryan. They mean no harm, but I fear that being so long on the road with little in the way of male company to keep them warm on a long, cold night has made them a little over-keen to assess any passing male as though he were little more than prey. They are perhaps the sexual equivalent of Jack when he wishes to hunt. We can only hope that such dedication to the pursuit of the Priapic does not deter or distract them from their other tasks.
Ugh. Lady, you're wasting your time looking at me like that. The way I feel now, I couldn't raise it with the best gaudy on the Western Seaboard. Besides, I maybe need it for other things.
Honey, there ain't much else I'd think was worth wasting on you.
But I'm supposed to be running sec, so I'm gonna need all the rest and all the strength I can get.
Honey, running sec for Armand is a shortcut to getting chilled. Make the most of things while you can.
What do you mean?
This is a run to nowhere, sugar. Some shithouse place called Jenningsville offered Armand Big Jack to do a run that no one else will go near. A run that we needed specialist equipment for. A run that means there are several other traders who want his ass in a sling. A run that saw most of our old sec buying the farm before we even started out. A straight run across land that most convoys would think more than twice before starting. Honey, you think any of us really has a chance of getting across here in one piece? Especially when the pack come calling?
Doc was looking over her shoulder. His expression confirmed for Ryan that he had been right in his assumptions. But overriding all was something that Ramona had said at the end of her litany.
What the fuck is the pack? And why the fuck is it going to be so triple bad?
Uh-huh. So Armand never said anything about that, eh? Shithead probably thought you wouldn't join up if you knew. How can you be good sec if you don't know what's ahead, though?
Fireblasted fuck. I'm glad you can see that, even if Laguerre can't.
He was about to ask once more about the pack, but something else superseded the need to know.